Well, welcome everyone. This is Duke Clark, and this is my podcast on Stories for Joshua. Day 20. We are in Football Journey Part 2. These are fun stories for me. As I look back on all the years that I played and coached, so it's kind of fun sharing these. My wife asks me all the time how I can remember stories 50 plus years ago, but can't remember to buy coffee that we need for tomorrow. I have no idea. As I tell her, but these memories are clear as a bell, so as they say, so I just share them. The picture I've posted here is the picture of my 1967 senior year football team at Rose High. Can you imagine how wonderful the internet is that I could find that picture posted? I'm number 52 on the first row, so it's pretty funny to me. So here's my memory. It was homecoming, 1967. I don't remember exactly who we were playing, but we were behind in the late part of the game. We'd failed to make a first down, and we were deep in our own territory. Coach Bud Phillips signaled for us to punt, but Mike Aldridge, our quarterback, went over to the sidelines and told him that we wanted to make a first down. Mike came back to the huddle and said, "Okay, what play do you want to run?" We all agreed on play 14. Now, we were an old-fashioned, double-tight T-formation backfield, which may not mean anything to some of you listening, but that was the old pounded-into-your-face offense that just ran. Although Mike was a good passer, and we did pass some, but this is what we had, which meant in the backfield with the T-formation, you had the quarterback under the center, two halfbacks and a fullback. And so it made a T between the quarterback and the running backs in the backfield. The play 14 meant that the one back, who was Tim Foley, the halfback, who went on to play at NC State and had a good career there, he was our best running back. The four hole was between the right guard and the right tackle. So that's what made up the play 14. The fullback would lead up into the hole, and then Tim would follow. I snapped the ball, and Tim took off. He broke the line of scrimmage, and he was on his way. Tim was also a high hurdler, so to see him run was beauty in motion. I was following him as fast as I could, and what happened next, I'll kind of have to explain to you. In these days, let's just say the rules were a little looser than they are today. We could throw a full body block anywhere on the field at any time. What's a full body block? Well, I would use my body as a flying projectile to wipe out any one or two players at any time on the field. Tim was just ahead of me, and there was someone following him. Now, today's rules do not allow you to hit any trailing football players. But back in the day, everyone was fair game. In fact, hitting any player anywhere on the field got me into the Shrine Bowl and into college. How is that possible? Well, the scouts would be looking at the film towards the end of the play, and they would see a streak come across the screen and hit some kid and lay him out. And that streak was me. As a center, I didn't always have a nose tackle over me, which meant I was uncovered. And I had made a commitment my senior year to myself to hit someone every play. So if I wasn't covered, I went head hunting, as they say, and took out any player foolish enough not to be looking for me. Today, I would probably be kicked out of every game. But back in the day, it was open season. I didn't take dirty, cheap shots. They saw me coming, but usually too late. So back to Tim and his run. I saw this trailer behind him, so I launched my body to take him out. He saw me and jumped up in the air. I hit the ground without hitting him and slid on my stomach. As I looked in front of me at my hands while sliding across the grass, the player came down and his 1-inch long metal cleats cut across the back of my hand, opening up a serious cut. Tim scored and we went ahead. We went ahead and won the game finally. But after he scored, I was to snap the ball for the extra point. I had clenched my fist so tightly from the pain that I had to force my fingers open and put them on the ball to make the snap for the extra point. They didn't care about blood in those days, so no referee said anything. To add insult to injury, somebody jumped over the pile and landed on my ankle, and I sprained it pretty badly. After the extra point was good, I limped over to the sidelines. A trainer wrapped my ankle as tight as he could, and I bandaged my hand so that it wouldn't bleed, and I went on and finished the game. We won homecoming, and all was good. Back at the school in the locker room, David Hahn's father came in to see how I was doing. We called him Papa Hahn. I had no daddy at the game at the time, so it meant the world to me that Papa Hahn came to check on me and see how I was doing. The next morning, I woke up and tried to stand up to get out of bed and fell flat on my face. My ankle was a balloon, and I could not walk. Mama took me to see Dr. Trevathan, our family doctor, and he wrapped it up and gave me crutches. We had film that morning, like we always do after games on Friday night, and that was about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, so I showed up with a heavily bandaged hand and on crutches. Coach Phillips was very concerned and asked me if I broke my ankle. I said no, it was just a bad sprain. Now, the next part is funny. It could never happen today, but Coach Phillips said, "Well, if you want to play next week, you're going to have to lose those crutches and walk on it." So I did. It hurt like hell, but by next Friday, I was in the starting lineup. I got a lot of sympathy at the homecoming dance, and even the local DJ wished me well. But that was life back in the 60s, and it was all good.